Good morning, everyone. Welcome. Today we're joined by Daniel Rodríguez Cofré, our Chief Executive Officer, Paco Camacho, our Chief Corporate Officer, and Eugenio Garza, our CFO. Plan for today is first to set the context for our conversation by reminding you of our capabilities-driven value creation model and the successful track record we have achieved by applying it through the years. Next, we will walk you through the background and conclusions of our strategic review and how we got to our focused FEMSA Forward strategy, as well as the abundant opportunities for growth and value creation that we see ahead of us. Finally, we'll describe the roadmap for the related actions that were just announced and some closing thoughts. And after that, we will open the call to Q&A. And with that, let me turn it over to Daniel.
Thank you, Juan, and hello to everyone on the call. We appreciate your participation today. While we have not yet communicated our full and detailed results for the fourth quarter and full year 2022, as you saw in our press release, we closed a strong year with yet another strong quarter. And that is a good backdrop for today's conversation. Let's begin by doing a quick recap of our capabilities-driven value creation model that many of you are familiar with. Basically, over decades, FEMSA has become very good at certain activities and at running certain type of businesses. And this is particularly relevant as we talk about FEMSA Forward and how we plan to focus on creating more value through our three core verticals. These capabilities include scalability, efficient logistics, and intensive use of processes, capillarity, consumer segmentation, fragmented distribution, and increased use of data and analytics in our decision-making. If we take a quick look at the growth trajectory of FEMSA's revenues since 2010, we see that our model has been quite successful, helping us deliver double-digit compound growth over this period, including through the challenges of the COVID pandemic, setting the stage for further acceleration through FEMSA Forward. In early 2022, as I began my tenure as CEO of FEMSA, we started a thorough review of our strategy with the purpose of ensuring that board of directors and the management team were well aligned as to how to pursue and maximize value creation going forward. The review had three components. First, define what FEMSA's strategic priorities are and how we expect to achieve them. Second, design a detailed, comprehensive, long-range plan reflecting those strategic priorities. And third, determine the right structure to achieve the long-range vision. These components comprise what today we are calling FEMSA Forward. We define clear strategic priorities for FEMSA, which you have heard us talk about recently. First, our three whats, which are first, strong growth, second, being increasingly digital, and third, maintaining a balanced risk-return profile. These whats will be achieved and accompanied by our three hows, which are, one, a thorough commitment to sustainability, such as our ambitious public goals regarding the use of renewable energy and zero operational waste to landfill. Second, enhanced by our remarkable team and collaborative culture. And third, supported by proactive engagement with all of our communities. Our long-range plan gave us several actionable takeaways. First, we assess and confirm the value creation potential across our businesses. Second, it became evident that our retail, beverage, and digital verticals offer the most compelling value creation opportunities within our platform. Third, we confirm our strong conviction that the three of them together leverage each other to unlock value creation synergies, particularly in our FEMSA-wide vision to transform the traditional retail landscape. Therefore, our overarching conclusion is that the best way to continue creating value at FEMSA is through a structure that focuses only on the businesses that are core to us, retail, beverage, and digital, where we have built leading platforms and have proven capabilities, financial strengths, and dynamic avenues for growth. FEMSA is a unique company with a distinctive set of advantages and opportunities. We have a very potent network of small format stores that has become an integral part of people's daily lives, where we interact with tens of millions of consumers every day. For its part, Coca-Cola FEMSA is an operational powerhouse, a key partner for the millions of small traditional retailers that comprise the most prevalent sales channel in Latin America. In digital, we are developing an ecosystem with value creation opportunities in its own right as consumers begin to adopt digital technologies to manage their financial needs. Furthermore, this ecosystem will allow us to leverage our core business verticals by connecting them to serve customers and consumer needs in a new and better way. Therefore, our focus for value creation and future development will be concentrated on retail, with excellent long-term growth potential and comprising proximity, health, and fuel. We see significant opportunities to continue developing our already powerful retail platform across small formats. Coca-Cola FEMSA, leveraging its leadership position, excellent execution, outstanding financial strengths, combined with the significant operating and strategic opportunities, all enhanced by the strategic partnership with the Coca-Cola Company and its globally leading brand portfolio. Digital, building a consumer-centric, value-added financial ecosystem that leverages our business's capillarity and strong consumer recognition, aiming to become the ally to over 30 million consumers. Our digital platform will play a key role leveraging and connecting our core business units to catalyze the evolution of multi-channel retail. We believe the commercial prowess of OXXO, coupled with the unparalleled client access through Coca-Cola FEMSA, provide a unique combination of assets that could, through digitally enabled solutions, solve the long-standing pain points of the traditional trade, while creating additional revenue and value streams. This focused business structure will allow us to better understand and serve our clients and consumers, who are the focal point of everything we do. We are convinced this is the right strategy for FEMSA to maximize value creation for the foreseeable future. Let's drill down on those three core business verticals. In retail, we are already a small format powerhouse with over 30,000 locations in 10 countries, spearheaded by OXXO, and with leading position in almost every market where we participate. But what do we see ahead for FEMSA Retail? We will keep growing OXXO's footprint in Mexico while developing other formats such as OXXO Smart, Para, Pronto, as well as Andati and Cafeño Drives. OXXO Smart is a smaller, more automated version of OXXO, well-suited for controlled environments. Para is our soft discount format, a slightly larger box with a high private label component that already has more than 200,000 stores in central Mexico and is now ready to scale up. Pronto is our own value proposition for the traditional channel, which we believe could eventually reach compelling scale. Andati and Cafeño Drives are coffee-centric drive-through formats, and that have already proved extremely successful in the northwest of Mexico. We will be talking more about these promising formats in the months and years to come. We will accelerate the expansion of proximity outside of Mexico, particularly in South America. We will explore the proximity retail space in the United States, including organic entry models. We will integrate Valora into our proximity platform, focusing on organic growth. In drugstores, we will consolidate our leading position in Chile while accelerating growth in Colombia, Ecuador, and Mexico. As we mentioned before, we aspire to empower and partner with Mexico's traditional retailers using FEMSA digital platform, aiming for OXXO and Coca-Cola FEMSA to leverage each other. This is a shared vision that we are exploring transversally across FEMSA. that should add significant value to every one of our three core business units. And that is the perfect transition to talk more about Coca-Cola FEMSA. Coca-Cola FEMSA is the largest bottler in the world in terms of volume, bringing the Coca-Cola Company's best-in-class beverage portfolio to millions of consumers. It is a highly sophisticated market developer with excellent omnichannel execution, while driving a retail-savvy, consumer-centric business model supported by digital tools and analytics. But it's what is ahead that is the most compelling. First, in operations and potential value creation opportunities, as we mentioned before, Coca-Cola FEMSA's journey towards a full commercial ecosystem is a necessary component to realize our aspiration and vision for a transformational platform for the traditional channel, where Coca-Cola FEMSA also stands to benefit from OXXO's considerable capabilities. Second, strategic opportunities. Coca-Cola FEMSA will continue to actively explore opportunities to expand its geographical footprint to other relevant territories in a disciplined manner. Finally, financial strengths. COF has a solid balance sheet and generates high levels of cash flow and dividends. In digital, 2022 was a dynamic year for its three main components: spin, loyalty through OXXO Premium, and B2B fintech. We achieved good milestones, such as nearly 4 million active users for spin, approximately 13 million active users for OXXO Premium, and our acquisition of NetPay to build the backbone of our B2B fintech operation. However, so far, they operate primarily as a standalone component, not yet as a system. Going forward, our aspiration is to become the everyday ally for more than 30 million Mexican consumers by building a digital financial and loyalty ecosystem that will make their lives easier through a broad array of value-added services. We're growing fast, attracting top talent, improving our user experience, setting up powerful partnerships, and rapidly building a consumer-centric platform. As we mentioned before, a key role of our digital platform will be facilitating and connecting our core businesses as we develop FEMSA's traditional trade platform in Mexico. From a strategic clarity follow-up, structural simplicity. What we're showing here is the proportional contribution to revenues and operating income of the different operations and investments as it looks today, versus a pro forma version that assumes all the steps communicated today have taken place. As you can see, the FEMSA forward pro forma structure is clear and simple, and it also shows the growing weight of our retail operations in the overall mix, a trend that we expect will only increase over time. We're not including digital in this slide because their contribution is yet to be significant. The adjustment and assumptions used to create this slide are presented in the appendix for your benefit. Moving on, we show a summary of attributes and characteristics that have served us well in the past, as well as some that should expect going forward. We will continue to leverage our proven capabilities-driven value creation model, developing and operating resilient, large-scale, consumer-centric businesses. We will take advantage of our strong long-term organic and inorganic growth potential and our operational excellence, seeking to deliver solid returns above our cost of capital. Going forward, you should also expect us to increase the focus on and collaborating among our core business verticals, manage our capital structure to maintain a solid investment-grade credit rating, exercise disciplined policy of returning capital to our shareholders, provide increased disclosure, and continue fine-tuning our board of directors and corporate governance practices, which we already began doing in 2022. On that topic, as we announced last year, our board will be reduced to 15 directors in 2023, with two new directors being proposed at this year's annual shareholders meeting to increase our board's retail and digital expertise as our business continues to evolve. And with that, let me turn it over to Eugenio, who will tell you more about the execution roadmap and our strategic and financial framework going forward.
Thank you very much, Daniel, and happy Friday to everyone. The increased focus of FEMSA Forward will require implementing several changes to our current business mix. Let's talk about the roadmap to get from point A to point B and the different tracks we're already following, with an expectation that they can be carried out within a time frame of 24 to 36 months, subject to market conditions. First, with regards to our investment in Heineken, this investment has generated both financial and strategic returns for FEMSA over the years. However, it does not fit within our new strategic framework. As such, we have decided to divest our Heineken shares through market transactions. We've already launched and priced the first accelerated book build process, and we also launched and priced the bond exchangeable into Heineken holding shares. We expect that those transactions will be closing next week. Next, on Envoy Solutions. We are extremely pleased with the performance and value that it has generated for us so far, yet we are convinced that this asset would be much better valued outside of the current FEMSA structure. Given this, we will seek strategic alternatives for Envoy with the ultimate medium-term objective to monetize or distribute its shares to our shareholders. For our minority investment in Jetro Restaurant Depot, as well as for our smaller non-core operations, such as Solistica and El Punto, we will also be seeking strategic alternatives. However, there are certain components of some of these smaller businesses that are important suppliers or providers to our core business units. In those cases, we may consider those components strategic and critical and integrate them as cost centers within our core operations. Throughout the entire process, we will be subject to market conditions, and we will take the necessary steps and time to maximize value. The implementation of these plans will be carried out gradually, always taking good care of our employees, clients, and suppliers. Finally, we aim to reduce our debt levels to achieve and maintain a target leverage ratio of 2x net debt to EBITDA ex-COF and maintain a solid investment-grade credit rating. Consistent with this, we have announced a liability management transaction seeking to repurchase certain of our outstanding US dollar and euro-denominated international notes using part of the proceeds we expect to receive from the sale of Heineken shares and the euro exchangeable bond. We will also endeavor to return to our shareholders over time capital in excess of that required for our organic and inorganic growth. As you might expect, these transactions are complex and they will take place over several years. We are currently not communicating our expectations of value for any of them or a detailed use of proceeds. However, you should not expect us to accumulate excessive amounts of cash that would hurt the efficiency of our balance sheet. Finally, a quick recap on how to think about our strategic and financial parameters going forward. Strong growth with double-digit revenue and EBITDA growth at retail and digital, and high single-digit growth at Coca-Cola FEMSA. Digitalization, leveraging technology at every level and building our digital ecosystem to serve over 30 million users in Mexico. Sector and geographic focus, pursuing opportunities only within our core business verticals across markets, emerging or developed, but with a predominant exposure to Latin America. Financial discipline, maintaining a strong investment grade credit rating supported by our 2x leverage ratio. Capital allocation discipline and shareholder returns with a zealous approach to returning to shareholders capital in excess of that required for value creating organic or inorganic growth in our core verticals. And on that note, let me turn it back to Daniel for some closing thoughts.
Thank you, Eugenio. I just want to reiterate how confident I am that FEMSA is in the best position it has ever been in to continue creating value for all of its stakeholders for a long, long time. Our team and our board have invested a lot of effort in reaching the conclusion discussed today. And I know this leaner, more focused FEMSA will continue to achieve great things for many years to come. This is a strategy that will allow us to maximize value for the foreseeable future, and we are fully committed to deliver on our high expectations. This is also the right time to let you know that the extended FEMSA team will be in New York and Boston the week of February 27th, and a smaller team will also be in London the week of March 6th. We hope to see many of you there. We thank you for your interest in our company, and we are happy to take your questions. Operator, please.
Our first call will come from Bob Ford at Bank of America. Bob, please go ahead.
Hey, thank you very much. Good morning, everybody, and thanks for taking my question. Daniel, following the strategic review, what's different in the capital allocation process and the more recent priority on hard currency generating assets? And how should we think about your longer term C-store plans in the United States in terms of timing, you know, the size of the investment, you know, organic or acquisition, you know, with or without gas, and any regional focus? And how are you thinking about differentiation in areas of competitive advantage in the U.S.? And then with respect to acquisitions generally, you know, how are you thinking about acquisitions across the broader business portfolio? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob, for your question. I mean, I think as we mentioned, let me try to start from the top. I mean, we are convinced that we need to continue to be a growth platform. And in that regard, I mean, Eugenio already mentioned that we will focus on organic growth. And in terms of inorganic, we will, as we have always been the case, to really follow a value creation concept. So we see that, I mean, Latin America will be by far the largest contributor to the business of FEMSA. And in terms of the exploration, we think that with the focus in the core business, and that I think is an important change from what we have done in the past, we will look for opportunities, but always keeping in mind that if we find, I mean, a good asset, that we are convinced that we can create value. So that is why we mentioned that in the case of the US, we will explore. We have not, I mean, we understand very well the market, but we will continue exploring. And if there is a good opportunity, we will make sure that that opportunity, we feel comfortable in terms that we can create value. So in the case of your question regarding fuel, We know that in the case of the convenience store chain in the U.S., there is a big link between the fuel business and the convenience store business. So most probably, we will explore different alternatives. So one could be maybe try to partner with a third party and see if we can take out the fuel risk. Or if we can, which is very similar to the model that we follow in Brazil. So we're open to consider, I mean, all alternatives. And we also, the fact that we are keeping our business of fuel in Mexico, I think is helping us to understand much better the economic model of the fuel business. And I think that knowledge potentially will help if there is a good opportunity, and we will potentially keep the risk of fuel. So that is where we are at this stage. And as I said, I mean, that would be in an exploration move, and we have nothing ready at this time to allocate capital in developed markets. I don't know, Paco, Eugenio, if you would like to complement.
Just to the third point, Bob, that you asked about the prioritization. I guess that we will continue with the same strong discipline in terms of where we put the resources. Each of the businesses, every year they come and say this is the type of targets and growth. And for that, the long-range plan that we conducted also served us to have a very visibility in terms of what type of resources each of the core businesses will need for the future. And we'll follow the discipline approach we have followed so far.
Yeah, maybe the only final comment that I would like to add, because I mean, you just mentioned, Paco, is that the fact that we have a clear long-term plan, that really will be the main driver in terms of capital allocation. So I think that, I mean, one of the differences from what was the case in the past, that we have a full clarity about what our intention for the next 5 years, and how each of the core businesses, the three verticals that we just mentioned, will define the path in terms of the value creation, as I said, in the next 5 years.
Our next question comes from Thiago Bortolucci, Goldman Sachs. Thiago, please go ahead.
Yes, hi, good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking the question and congrats on the announcement and on the successful placing today. Look, I have a few follow-ups, right? Given that you're including inorganic growth within the CapEx, right, that you prioritize in order to keep the business growing, how should we think about payback to shareholders, right? Is there, I understand in the long term, you have a commitment of keeping leverage at 2x and excess cash will be returned. But in the very short term, and especially in the context of this Heineken sale that you're making, is there room for a one-time dividend payment? Is there room for you to increase your recurring payout? And how do you think about buybacks going forward? This is the first one. I would like also to understand a little bit more the rationale for the timing of these bonds repurchases that you're making at this point. And if I may, guys, sorry for being long here, but a final one, where does Valora fit in your current and reviewed strategy for proximity, right? Is this a business that should keep consuming cash? How do you think about organic expansion there? And is it Europe also an area that should bring more M&A going forward? Those are the questions. Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you, Thiago. I will talk about the question first about the capital, and then I will ask Eugenio to comment on the bond repurchase, and also I will comment on Valora, and please, Paco, you can also help me on this. I mean, first, I think in terms of the return, the capital return to shareholders, I think we have a clear commitment that we are a growth company. So in that regard, Thiago, we will seek to achieve and maintain the leverage target, as we just communicated. And we will deploy capital to grow organically and inorganically in our core verticals. So, that is something that we want to really stress. However, obviously, you should not expect us to hold inefficient amounts of cash on our balance sheet, which means we will return capital to shareholders more actively than we have done in the past. Today, as you can imagine, there are a lot of moving parts. So, I mean, for us, it's very difficult, and maybe we will just speculate, try to give a number or try to provide you a timing. I mean, we have done a very quick and fast movement in terms of the sale of the Heineken shares. Obviously, the first step will be ideally to reduce our debt. And then, I mean, having the combination in terms of what are the opportunities in terms of finance, the growth, both organically and inorganically, if after that analysis, I mean, over the next months, we will see that there is an opportunity in order to keep the right balance structure. Obviously, we will consider, as we have said, to return that capital to the shareholders. But as I said, I don't feel comfortable at this stage to make any commitment in terms of timing or amount, because I as I said, really, we don't know at this stage. So I think we are clear about our strategy, how we would like to allocate resources in terms of the organic growth. And then based on that and the resources that we will get in the next couple of months, then we will make that final decision. And definitely, once we get that clarity, we will communicate to you all. So that for me is the first part. Regarding Valora, as we have always said, we see Valora, I mean, as a nice opportunity to develop, I mean, a regional platform in Europe. We also just said that the main focus during the first if you want, period of time will be to integrate Valora into the proximity division, and at the same time, mainly focus on organic growth, because that is where I think we can bring value from Mexico to the European team. And definitely, the main market where we see that opportunity is in Germany. I mean, Germany, when you analyze Germany, even though that is a developed market, when you visit large cities, as we have done during the last couple of years, you will find there are, I mean, the large population of immigrants that you find in cities like Berlin, for example, there are certain neighborhoods that look much more like Latin America than Germany, as we all know Germany. So we think that there is a nice opportunity for us to combine our knowledge in Latin America with the current footprint and the strong brands that Valora has in Europe. But in a nutshell, we will concentrate in organic growth and most probably mainly in Germany. So that's what I could comment regarding Valora. And maybe finally, also, they are doing a great job in terms of convenience. And we see that there is also, good practices that we can learn and bring to this part of the world, so to Mexico and the rest of our operations in Latin America. So that would be my comments. And then let me turn it over to Eugenio to comment on the bonds repurchase.
Thanks, Daniel, and hi, Thiago, thanks for the question. Just to frame and complement what Daniel just said, I mean, first you gotta recognize that we were already spending $1.5 billion a year in CapEx in Latin America, growing our core businesses. And through the LRP, given all the opportunities that we see out there that Daniel described, the growth of Bara, Pronto, et cetera, we see a lot of low-hanging fruit in terms of capital deployment, organically just growing our platforms, especially with the digital enablement that all of these platforms present. And we think that the scalability of that could make, for very attractive short-term both growth and capital returns. Having said that, we will be generating with the sale of Heineken and some of the other assets some excess liquidity, and we have decided, as you well pointed out, to start with the tender of the bonds that we announced late last night. We do need, obviously, to retire some of the debt to get to the 2x net debt to EBITDA level. And just given the prices at which these bonds were traded, given the coupons in a much different interest rate environment, we believe that it is a very short-term accretion move and probably the most efficient use of capital that we are getting at this point. And we will continue to monitor those markets to make sure that we reach our target leverage ratio and also take advantage of the accretion that retiring the debt below par provides. And then going forward, as we start to, look at inorganic opportunities, we will, as Daniel mentioned before, be very disciplined in terms of how we allocate capital, make sure that the returns that we are seeing on that M&A are commensurate with the strategy and the financial returns. And if and only if we still have capital left over, we will be returning that over time to shareholders, either in the form of share repurchases opportunistically when we see that there are mismatches between where our stock is trading and where we believe fundamental value to be, or alternatively doing extraordinary dividends or modifying our dividend payout structure to make sure that excess capital gets returned to shareholders in the most efficient way. So those would be my two cents on that. And with regards to Valora, again, just to complement the organic strategy growth strategy that they're seeing, again, obviously requires some investment, but it's relatively modest with regards to the overall picture of FEMSA and would not materially alter our free cash projections going forward.
Our next question comes from Marcela Recchia at Credit Suisse. Marcela, please go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you so much for taking my questions. I have three quick questions, if I can. First, on Heineken's placement, basically, if you can give us a little bit of more color on the rationale of the size and timing, as well as the tax implications for FEMSA post the Heineken sale, okay? This is the first question. Secondly, considering the new formats to be explored at OXXO, what is the white space do you still see for new stores in Mexico? Okay. And third, I also saw during the presentation that it's part of the plan to enter the US C-store business, right? So just to understand a little bit, what's the mind here in terms of how you want to enter the country, if it will be greenfields with OXXO brand, or if you are considering any kind of M&A to enter the US C-store business. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your question. I mean, I will start first with your question regarding the new stores in Mexico and then the C-stores in the US. And then I will ask Eugenio to comment on the Heineken side. I mean, in terms of Mexico, I mean, our view is that, I mean, in the case of OXXO, we will most probably continue to be growing at a pace of around 800 to 1,000 stores per year. So we still see that there is a good, if you want, opportunity to continue growing OXXO. But at the same time, as I already mentioned, we see that there are opportunities in other formats. So, and that the ones that we just described. So, I mean, first, I mean, how we, by having a very good segmentation, we can open some smart store, which is, as I said, a small version of OXXO in a controlled environment. I mean, like the one that we just opened at the Tecnológico of Monterrey University. As I said, we have a very strong belief that there is a nice opportunity for us combining the three businesses to support the traditional channel. And that is why we are also testing, in order that we can also better understand the pain points of the traditional channel, but by our Pronto format. So I think that also is a key element. And in terms of our discount format, Vara, which we have been operating this model for more than 10 years, we feel now in a very strong position that we have find the right customer value proposition that we are continuing improving, but at the same time that we have find the right business model in order to scale up that format. So I think when we talk about proximity, we see proximity as a wider, if you want, space than just the OXXO traditional store that you all know. So as I said, we see still a nice opportunities to continue growing OXXO in Mexico and then complement that with the other formats that we are developing. So we feel very comfortable about the opportunity to continue increasing our footprint in Mexico with different customer value proposition and really having a much better understanding how, the Mexicans satisfy their needs, which, for example, Vara is different from the OXXO format. So I think that for me, and that is also being reflected in our long-range plan, where we see a very strong opportunity combined with what I also said, because I don't want to forget to mention that we are increasing the speed of the growth outside of Mexico, particularly Latin America. I mean, Brazil, the other market as well. Again, we feel very comfortable when we talk about particularly Colombia, Chile, and Peru, that, I mean, our customer value proposition and the profitability per store are at the right level, so we can again can scale up the model in order to become a much more stronger and solid platform in each country, and that the OXXO footprint you will start to see more often in the other markets. So that is what I would like to comment regarding mainly OXXO, both in Mexico and outside of Mexico. Then regarding the US, I mean, what we said is that we will continue exploring the market. We will seek opportunities both organically and inorganically. And when we talk about organically, we are thinking more in those areas where we can find a blank space and that there are maybe closer to the border. So that's where we see that maybe there is an opportunity to develop some organic growth. But we also recognize that, I mean, there is a much larger footprint of regional, very successful convenience store chain, and those are the ones that we will explore. And over time, I mean, as I said earlier in the call, if we find a good opportunity that will allow us to create value, definitely we will look at it. And so that is what I can comment at this stage regarding the US. So let me now turn over to Eugenio, try to answer your question regarding Heineken.
Sure, thanks, Daniel, and good to see you, Marcela. Look, with regards to Heineken, as you know, we've got a relatively sizable position. So we wanted to take advantage of the fact that management at Heineken, as you know, is executing tremendously well on its evergreen strategy. And there's, healthy demand and appetite for Heineken stock right now. So we took advantage of the opportunity. Heineken, when we announced this, reached out to us with the interest of participating in the offer. So we also took advantage to that and ended up pricing a larger deal than we otherwise would have expected. At what we believe to be a win-win situation for both companies. Their repurchase actually will be EPS accretive, so that in and of itself makes the Heineken stock more valuable and is conducive also to facilitate our exit going forward in the next transaction. So those are, I think, the main reasons we were able to, between the ABB and the exchangeable bond, pretty much cover half of the position that we have in Heineken. So we feel good about the little overhang that's left and how easy it will be for us going forward to do this in a way that minimizes the impact both on Heineken and our own position. With regards to your question on taxes, as you know, in our balance sheet and in our investor relations website, we do have a pretty detailed disclosure with regards to what the tax liability is on the Heineken shares. So for your modeling, you could assume that just on a proportionate basis, we would be paying the taxes that are associated with the ABB based on that number.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Ricardo Alves at Morgan Stanley. Ricardo, please go ahead.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thanks, everybody. Great presentation. Ricardo Alves, Morgan Stanley. A couple of follow-ups that I have. One on Danielle's point. You mentioned specifically in the presentation and also now in the latest response that you accelerate, right? The word that you use, you accelerate expansion in South America. Can you just talk a little bit about the main drivers in more details? I mean, is it as part of the strategic review, I'm sure that you guys revised your plans in Brazil. So I don't know if Brazil is going to be the main driver. So just to try to quantify a little bit more, if we can, but also get a little bit more qualitative comments. Also, a follow-up on Eugenio's point on Heineken. The one thing that caught investors, at least in early in the day yesterday, off guard, was the 24-36 month reference, particularly as it pertained to Heineken shares, and that concern went away fast with the offering. So now the question is, given the offer yesterday, given the commentary that you just made, right, that Heineken is committed or was committed to this part of the transaction, and also that you are not in the board anymore, is still the base case that maybe the Heineken component of the strategic review is going to be significantly faster than, for the remaining shares that you have? That's the second question. And third question, just a follow-up also on Envoy. It has been flagged by you guys as a great business, right, by the management team. And now it's not part of FEMSA in the future. So just a little bit more details on that. What has driven you guys to decide to keep it out of the scope of FEMSA in the long run? So just a little bit more details on that. Appreciate the time. Thanks and congrats.
Thank you very much, Ricardo. I will take your question regarding Latin America, and then Eugenio can help me with Heineken. And also, I think Eugenio, you and I, and also Paco, maybe you can help me to comment regarding Envoy, because I think it's a very, very good question. In terms of Latin America, when I say acceleration, it's because let me talk first about Brazil, and then I will talk about the other markets where we have been for a longer period of time. So when we decided to start the journey in Brazil, We recognize that our, if you want, vision in the long term for Latin America, as we said internally, is how we can build an Oxxo Mexico outside of Mexico, I mean, in terms of the size and the scale. And definitely, to reach that vision, we need to have a very strong business in Brazil. And with our partner there, with Raízen, what we decided is that we need to start in a specific region in order that we can grow the brand, that we can test all the customer value proposition. And we decided to do there, I mean, in the big area of Sao Paulo. And as you most probably have seen, the guys that have visited Sao Paulo, that now it's more common that you can see the OXXO brand there. And so far, from a customer value proposition point of view, the proposal is proven to be very, very well accepted by the Brazilians. When you look at our economics and in terms of at a store level, we feel pretty comfortable that we are going absolutely in the right direction. Obviously, we adjusted the if you want, the proposal based on the Brazilian needs, but at the same time, we feel that proposal will continue to evolve, but we are in a very good shape, and that is why we strongly believe that we can scale up that footprint in Brazil faster. So that is what we have decided. I mean, later, I mean, we can share with you the numbers, and then I will ask Juan maybe to go into details on that. In the rest of the geographies where we have been longer period of time, I think even during the pandemic and now that we are out of the COVID pandemic phase, I mean, we see a very, very nice economic model at the store level. I would say particularly in Colombia, second in Chile, but also, even though that we have a smaller scale in Peru, we also see that very, very promising also in Peru. So now that we when you take over mature stores in the three markets, we have a strong value proposition, but at the same time, we have a profitable business. So what we need now to do is to scale up, to speed up, if you want, the growth, in order that we can also absorb the overheads that we have in place. And that is why, I mean, connecting the comment that Eugenio made regarding CapEx or capital allocation in our current businesses, definitely we will require, I mean, part of the capital in order that we can speed up the growth in Latin America. So, I mean, as I said, I feel very comfortable that in all the markets that we are in today outside of Mexico, in Latin America, we have a very strong value proposition that is proven to be also profitable. So that I would like to comment regarding that. And then if I would say that let's move quickly to the Heineken, Eugenio, and then I will ask Paco to comment on Envoy, please.
Let me add a little bit to what you said, Daniel, regarding OXXO in Latin America, because Ricardo, one thing that you also need to keep in mind is that as we see these opportunities in these additional geographies, and as the teams have been very successful, as Daniel said, fine-tuning the value proposition to fit each of the market's consumer needs, it is also important to link it to the long-term plan. In other words, once again, as we look into the opportunities for the next 5 years, the OXXO team identified what specific opportunities and needs exist in each of these countries. So once again, the growth is going to be done in a very disciplined manner, consistent with what was identified in the long-term plan. And everything makes sense from a business standpoint and from a resource allocation and from resource management standpoint based on that exercise.
Okay. Sure, just quickly on Heineken. We did mention again the path to get from point A to point B for the entire FEMSA Forward strategy to be in the neighborhood of 24 to 36 months. That includes Heineken, but it also includes some of the other portfolio moves that we are making. So yeah, we were pleasantly surprised with the success of the Heineken offer. Could that mean that we're going to be exiting sooner? It could. Having said that, we're not in a hurry, and we want to make sure that we do the right thing in terms of maintaining stability in the Heineken stock price, and also in conjunction with the other capital deployment opportunities that that we have. So again, we're sticking to our 24 to 36 months for the entire strategy. Some steps will be done faster, some steps will be done a little bit slower. And on Envoy, I don't know, Paco, if you want to comment?
Yeah, Envoy, Ricardo, regarding Envoy, indeed, we have been allocating capital in that, behind that business. The returns, we are extremely happy with the returns we have had. But again, as we analyze what was needed to improve value creation moving forward, we thought that this business will generate even more value if it was outside FEMSA and if we added some capital optionalities. So moving forward, it is our expectation that we'll find additional solutions that will allow this business to generate more value outside FEMSA than inside FEMSA.
Just to complement Paco's point on Envoy, again, I think we got into a very attractive business at a very attractive time. The industry is in consolidation, and most of this consolidation is from smaller regional players where we've been able to implement a kind of state-of-the-art route optimization, pricing mechanisms, and others. And again, we still continue to believe that the team has done a great job in identifying, how to create value going forward. Having said that, very hard for us to really believe that this will be accurately valued within the construct of a much larger FEMSA with different businesses, different geographies, et cetera. And more importantly, I mean, Envoy right now was the number two player in the industry, is kind of the cornerstone in kind of what will define the chessboard in terms of how the industry shapes up to the future. So we believe that we are in a very advantageous position to either partner up and or look for other alternatives that will create value for us as FEMSA, and then moreover so outside of FEMSA going forward. So we're very happy with the investment, but the tough choices had to be made with regards to how to maximize value within FEMSA. And hopefully through the process, we will have both FEMSA shareholders, employees at Envoy, and everyone happy.
Thank you. Can you maybe just one final comment on Envoy, which I think apply really for the other businesses that won't be part of the long-term portfolio of FEMSA, which I would say that all of them, they are a very successful business model, including Envoy. I mean, Envoy has created a lot of value, but I mean, based on what we have analyzed in terms of our long-term opportunities using the long-range plan, we have made that decision in terms of that we really need to focus. And when you decided to focus, there are certain businesses that even if they are profitable, they are not part in terms of the scale of the opportunities that we can find in the three verticals. So, I mean, the reason for us thinking about, potentially divest other business at the right price, obviously, is because we would really would like to focus on these three verticals. It's not about that we are disappointed regarding the financial performance or the opportunities that they have. It's just that our priorities are in the three verticals, and to be, if you want, consistent with that belief, we need to analyze opportunities outside of FEMSA for the other businesses.
Our next question comes from Luis Willard at GBM. Luis, please go ahead.
Hey everyone, good morning. Thanks for the question and congrats on the announcement. So it's actually a couple of questions. The first one, if I may, I think it's very easy. Do you, as part of this reorganization and rethinking lots of goals ahead, have you set up any different program regarding top management variable compensation to be aligned with this long-term goals? That would be the first.
Okay. Well, I mean, as you most probably are aware, we really base our top management compensation related to value creation. And when we think about what we would like to focus, which is growth and obviously value creation, At this stage, we don't feel the need to change our compensation scheme going forward. I mean, obviously, if over time we see that maybe we need to do a twist in the compensation scheme, I mean, we will open to do that. But I mean, to be very, very honest with you, we feel very comfortable with the current structure. I mean, in terms of how we compensate the top management, and I think that that compensation scheme is very aligned with our strategic intent, which is, as I said, growth and value creation. So we don't see a need to make any change, at least at this stage.
Yeah,
you're on mute.
Yeah, sorry about that. Thank you. So, and if I may, another one. Thank you, Daniel, for the answer. So early in the strategic review last year, we were very vocal on this concept of expanding return over invested capital versus WACC, the spread between the two of them of each of the businesses. So I assume that the result of this framework is what you're communicating as we speak. So, from that perspective, how should we think about capital structures and capital allocation decisions within divisions as we move forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good question, and then I mean, Paco and Eugenio, feel free to compliment. But I mean, overall, I mean, the fact that we are concentrated in these two businesses, mainly I'm talking about proximity retail and Coca-Cola FEMSA, and we are building, I mean, a business in digital. I think, I mean, both businesses, and you know very well, they have been very, very successful in terms of return of invested capital. We don't see any reason to change that. Actually, I think, as Eugenio also mentioned, we see that there are very nice opportunities, particularly on the organic growth, to create more value and much faster. So, I mean, in that regard, I mean, I don't have any concern about that. Digital, as I said, is a business that we are building. It's a much more medium-term, development that we have put all the if you want, the basis on place, and now, as we also said during the call, we need to move and really start to build the concept of the ecosystem and to leverage that with the two core businesses, which are mainly proximity and also Coca-Cola FEMSA. But that's what I can comment. I don't know, Paco or Kenny, if you would like to compliment.
No, I mean, very little to add. From a capital allocation perspective, we will continue to try to maximize, of course, the returns. And those naturally come from organic investments. I mean, there's no higher ROIC investment that we could make right now than an additional OXXO store. And as we look into these multi-format categories that leverage up the OXXO core capabilities, I mean, that will continue to be a main area of focus. And as we look towards other organic and inorganic opportunities, again, the ROIC versus WACC spread will continue to be a driving force in the way which we allocate capital. But then that will also, I mean, compete with balance sheet initiatives such as we're seeing right now, the debt repurchase, share repurchase, and or dividend distribution. So I think, maintaining the solid balance sheet will help us kind of have the high-class problem of trying to make capital allocation decisions between a number of very highly NPV positive projects.
Thank you, Luis. Our next question comes from Leandro Fontanesi at Bradesco. Leandro, please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity. About the strategic plan, of course, there's a lot of positive things, and the stock has reacted positively. I just wanted to make two questions here. There are different discussions than what we are having. The first one, it's about your share structure. So I understand that, you know, FEMSA has two types of shares, Series D and Series B. Just wondering if, as a part of the strategic plan, you analyzed the share structure and and thought about the potential unification and why you thought that, you know, proceeding with the current structure is the ideal one. And the second question, a lot of the value of a relevant part of the value of FENSA came from the beer business, right, through a minority stake. Now that you have decided to sell your stake in Heineken, does that mean that you will no longer have exposure to beer, or you may consider in the future making an acquisition or entering the beer sector in a case in which you have a controlling participation, in a case in which you would be the main operator of the business? Thank you.
Thank you, Leandro, for your question. Let me maybe start with your second question. I mean the straight answer is no. We're not looking for any opportunities in the beer industry. And then on top of that, I mean, if we are consistent with our strategy that we just defined about where are the top or the key verticals that we would like to focus. I mean, as you can see, beer is not part of that. So, I mean, that in that regard, we are very clear, as many other things are not part of this strategy. Then on top of that, I mean, if, as we said, we will explore for opportunities in the U.S., the fact that we don't have the restriction of owning shares at Heineken, that really will open, a lot of opportunities that in the past we were constrained due to the three-tier regulation in the U.S. So, I mean, for me, that is very clear about beer. I mean, in terms of the share structure, also, I would like to ask Eugenio to complement on that. But definitely, I mean, in terms of the strategy that we have defined, we don't see a need at this stage to do any changes. I mean, there is no restriction for us. I mean, from a management point of view, in terms of create the value in the three verticals that require, a change in the share structure. So that's what I can comment. But Eugenio, please complement on that part, please.
Sure, no, thank you, Daniel. And thanks for the question, Leandro. I think on the share structure, frankly, as we were surveying kind of where investors had the pain points with regards to a portfolio, I mean, that, to be honest, did not come up as often as simplifying and being more focused on the businesses that aligned interest better with regards to our shareholders. So that didn't come into play. Having said that, if you do recall, back in 1998, when the structure was voted on by all of the minority shareholders, it was accepted that the UB shares that hold most of the vote actually have a lower dividend, 20% lower dividend than the rest of the shareholders. So, I mean, that was approved back in 1998, and I think it served well in terms of providing stability to the group going forward. And now with this new FEMSA Forward strategy, hopefully align the business interests of our minority shareholders with the rest of the stakeholders here. So we saw no reason to change what was already voted on by shareholders back in 1998.
And it was actually, if I might add, we confirmed 10 years later in 2008, we again went to the market, we went to the minority shareholders, and by a 2-to-1 ratio, it was again confirmed that people wanted the structure to remain. And I think to Eugenio's point, the higher dividend of the U.S. a part of that. So it was not only approved originally when we did the IPO in New York, but it was reconfirmed some years later. So we feel comfortable, even though obviously, you know, of late, the companies moving to one share, one vote from a governance standpoint, clearly that's something that some people feel that they want to do now. In our case, we're very comfortable the way we are.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Rodrigo Alcantara at UBS. Rodrigo, please go ahead.
Hi guys, Daniel, Eugenio, Juan, Kike for my question. Here, just want to clarify. So traditionally, the dividends that you all the FEMSA pays come from Coca-Cola FEMSA, right, and Heineken itself. Just to verify here, I mean, as you mentioned, that FEMSA will return more active in terms of capital distribution. So it's fair to say that in the future, the cash, I mean, also will become or will compensate or even more, that dividend that we are going to to lose from Heineken? Is it fair to say that or to think that? The second one, very quickly, appreciate your comments on the U.S., right? Just curious about what your latest thoughts on drugstores in Mexico emanate there, potentially also in Brazil. Those would be my questions.
Okay, good. Let me start with your second question, Rodrigo, and then I will ask Eugenio to comment on the dividends. I mean, in terms of the drugstores, I mean, definitely one of the things that we have learned since we made the first acquisition, which was, now I think almost 10 years ago when we started in Mexico, but then in 2015 when we acquired the Socofar company in Chile and Colombia, is that really by having a regional platform, we're able to create a very nice scale in order that we can create value to our customer by being much more, if you want, focused on the price that we have to the end consumer. So in that regard, we see that our main focus, as I also mentioned, in the case of Chile, where we have a very, very strong position, is to remain with that position, but leverage the organic growth in the other markets that we're in. Mexico definitely is very relevant, and then Colombia and Ecuador. So, that is also, a very effective way to allocate capital to create value. And then in terms of M&A, in the case of Mexico, obviously, if there are good opportunities in Mexico or in the other markets that we are in, definitely we will analyze and we will consider. So, that is something that we are always looking and exploring. And if something attractive appears in terms of price and in terms of the conviction that we can create value, those opportunities will be analyzed. Particularly in the case of Brazil, even though that is an attractive market, I think there is a big challenge there. In terms of that, how we make sure that we can create value. Today the value, from our perspective of the many chains in Brazil, is that they are fully valued. So, with that condition, it's very difficult for us to think that we, by acquiring, a company that is fully valued, that we can create value. So it's not that it's not a market that we are not interested, but for the time being, we really would like to focus in the four markets that we are today, because we see good opportunities to continue growing and create value. So that's what I can comment regarding your question on drugstores. And in the case of dividends, I don't know, Eugenio, maybe you can answer that question, please.
Absolutely, and thanks for the question, Rodrigo. At the end of the day, Rodrigo, as you know, cash is fungible, but we followed philosophically a dividend payout policy that tried to do a pass-through of the COF, Heineken, and Jetro dividends, and then also used a portion of the retail business generated cash flows to come up with a dividend to FEMSA shareholders in line with the growth strategy. Going forward, of course, we will not be relying upon either the Jetro or Heineken cash flows. Having said that, because we're putting a lot of that capital to use to reduce debt, we will get additional financial flexibility from the relief of the interest expense. And then we will also be using a similar percentage of the cash flow that theoretically was coming from the retail businesses to fund the dividend going forward, again, in line with maintaining enough capital in the business to take advantage of all these wonderful opportunities for capital deployment with good paybacks and good IRR. So in short, we will continue to kind of follow the same philosophy, but clearly the math will be different with the new portfolio.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ben Ferrer at Barclays. Ben, please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, and thank you very much. Just one question I had, and it's on digital, as we haven't spent much time on it. And it's clear in the presentation how you think of connecting the dots between the loyalty system, Spin, and the B2B fintech solution for the business, please? Obviously, that's all focused on Mexico, but can we also talk about what you think the opportunities of digital are outside of Mexico, given that you continue to talk about the growth in Latin America within retail, European exploration focusing on organic growth? So how should we think of digital in those markets? Thank you.
Yeah, that's thank you for your question. I mean, I think it's a very, very good one. I mean, definitely, I think that it's very similar to what we have done with other formats, and like the example of Foxo. So we really believe that we have such a nice and good opportunity in terms of developing the digital ecosystem in Mexico. Is that where we would like to focus? Having said that, we do see that based on the footprint that we have in both businesses, so Coca-Cola FEMSA and the proximity division, and also the drugstores business outside of Mexico, that is an avenue that we will explore. But today, again, with this principle in terms of focus, try to really concentrate on those avenues that can create value. And now we think we have enough work to do to mainly focus today in Mexico. But we will continue to consider to bring that knowledge and that value proposition to the other markets in the future. So the answer is yes, we will do it, but it will gonna take place later once we have really built a nice and strong digital ecosystem in Mexico, and from there, bring the knowledge and the expertise to the other markets, as we have done in the past with other formats.
Probably just to add on that, Ben, and thank you for the question, is that as we look at what the digital team is building, the solutions that they are creating are sufficiently robust and ample as to later on take them to different geographies. I mean, clearly, to Daniel's point, when that happens, we will need to make adjustments, because clearly the realities of each of the markets are different in terms of what are the financial needs, what are the needs related to value-added services. But clearly that is something that when you look at what the team is building, I mean, clearly it will have the possibilities moving forward to transport that into other geographies. And further, just going back to the pharmacies, when we look at our pharmacy business, drugstore business in South America, they already are providing some of these services that we are building in Mexico. So it's a matter of making sure that we take the right moves at the right time, but clearly capitalizing on what is being built today in Mexico from the digital team.
Thank you, Paco. The next question comes from Carlos Lavoy at HSBC. Carlos, please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, everyone. What did the strategy review reveal to you and to the board about why the operating capability of Coca-Cola FEMSA has been at the highest level globally, but the stock has been the worst performing stock among major global bottlers since you sold the brewery? And how's the board, or how's the company going to fix the structural capital constraints of Coca-Cola FEMSA that are created perhaps from its holding company structure? I'm talking about the broken Coke FEMSA stock, the lack of liquidity, maybe the globally disadvantaged weighted average cost of capital of Coke FEMSA, and how that affects its ability to produce mergers and acquisitions competitively versus other bottlers. That was my first question.
Okay. Hi, Carlos. Thank you very much. Well, let me first try to comment that, or reinforce the message that I just gave, that we see that having the three, if you want, verticals together, we have a strong belief that we can create more value for the whole system. So when I say the whole system, is because we strongly believe that we can create value more for Coca-Cola FEMSA having this together than just separating the businesses. So I think that for me is very clear from a strategic belief. We don't see any restrictions in terms of for Coca-Cola FEMSA to look for opportunities in other geographies. I mean, in terms of its balance sheet. I mean, in terms of the strong cash flow that Coca-Cola FEMSA generates. So we don't see that restriction that I think you are referring to. So I mean, as I said, we feel comfortable with that. Obviously, we would love to have more liquidity for the Coca-Cola FEMSA shares, but I mean, our priority at this stage is how we can continue creating value. But I don't know, Genio or Paco, if you would like to comment on that question.
Sure, if I may add, I mean, just to put a little bit more context to your comments, I mean, Coke is sitting on $2 billion of cash and has a big pristine balance sheet in terms of debt repayment needs. And moreover, it has share issuance capacity given our structure that can allow it to issue a significant amount of equity without losing the consolidation at FEMSA. So I would argue that, I mean, and against the construct of your argument, Carlos, that they don't have the financial wherewithal to do any kind of strategic move that they would like to do. And again, we are, I mean, as I'm assuming you are as well, a little bit frustrated with regards to how the stock is traded and the liquidity is a part of it, but there might be other more fundamental buy-side restrictions with regards to how capital is being allocated in the sector vis-a-vis where it was 10 years ago. Again, we're addressing it, slowly but surely, but the strategic review and the way the board looked at this was not so much as to how to make the stock price react better or worse, but how to create fundamental value both at Gulf and at FEMSA. And this, going back to Danielle's comment, we do believe that having Gulf as part of this integral ecosystem to attack the traditional trade creates a ton more value for all companies together.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Hector Maya at Scotiabank. Hector, please go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me? Yep. Thank you. Thank you for taking my question. So right now, as it was mentioned, FEMSA's highest return comes from additional OXXO stores. But considering that you probably have close to $5 billion of cash, also considering COF at hand, which is close to 15% of your market cap before even considering the proceeds from Heineken from the offer of shares, would it make sense to become more aggressive on faster investments on the digital front? Because it's now one of your key pillars in your strategy. So how much CapEx should we expect in the next 3 years for your digital front, your digital initiatives? And would you complement your offer eventually with a marketplace? I mean, there could be many, many ways in which you could leverage your vast physical footprint for a marketplace and tackle competitors directly like Amazon and Mercado Libre and go for a truly digital approach. So the question is, are you thinking to go for developing a marketplace now, or should we wait some extra years down the road to do so, or a marketplace will not form part of your strategy in the foreseeable future?
Yeah, Hector, thank you for your question. I mean, definitely, I mean, we are convinced that we have a unique set of assets to leverage and build, a very strong digital ecosystem. So in that regard, I think we feel very comfortable with what we are building. I mean, your question regarding speed, I think that when you see the growth that we have achieved over the last, 24 months, I think that it has been very, very aggressive. I mean, 4 million, if you want, active customers in Spin, then almost 13 to 14 million in OXXO Premia. And that is something that we have built, as I said, over the last 18 to 24 months. So going forward, there is no restriction in terms of capital allocation for this business. I mean, we will invest what is required to make sure that we have the digital ecosystem. And the digital ecosystem, obviously, we're talking about all the avenues. I mean, and those avenues, one of the things that we have learned now that we have a very nice, if you want, group of talent that has joined the company, that they have a very strong experience in the digital world, is that collaboration is one, it's very relevant in terms of how you build, I mean, a digital ecosystem faster, that the time to market is shorter. And what I mean by that we need to work, I mean, across our verticals, but on top of that, we also are looking for opportunities outside of FEMSA, I mean, in terms of commercial partnership, in terms of, if you want, equity partnerships or even acquisition, as it was the case of NetPay. So, I mean, all the options are on the table, and there is no restriction from the board or from the top management in terms of how to allocate resources to this business, because we are convinced that we can make really a difference in the daily lives of millions of Mexicans on the first phase, and then later on the rest of the market that we are in Latin America. And regarding your specific question about marketplace, well, yes, I mean, that's something that we will explore. But as I said, I mean, we are not restricted. The only, if you want, not restriction, but the discipline that we would like to keep is that we need to make a sustainable digital ecosystem. And that means that we need to make sure that we have a very strong value proposition. And that's what I also said, that even though that we have built nice, if you want, platforms inside the digital ecosystem, now we really need to connect them, I mean, with inside the digital space, but then also connect in a much more efficient way with the other verticals of FEMSA that we think are the ones that we should focus going forward. So that is really, if you want, for us, in terms of keeping the discipline, how we make sure that the speed is a speed that really helps us to have this strong customer value proposition in the digital ecosystem. So that's what I can comment at this stage. I don't know, Paco, Eugenio, if you have any other comment.
Just probably a couple of additional thoughts, Hector, and thank you for the call. But just as you said, there are so many potential opportunities out there in the context of the digital world that it is mandatory to have discipline and to approach it from a strategic standpoint. And to that end, when you look at what the strategic verticals that have been identified by the digital team, it provides with that guidance moving forward. So they have defined three verticals, as you might remember. One is the fintech through a spin and all the value-added services that might stem out of it. The second is the loyalty and coalition program. And then the third one is the B2B component. So those three verticals have been working, the team has been working on them for the last several months. All of them have provided significant positive results. And then just, again, moving forward, the discipline is going to be to stick to these verticals, and at the same time, put them all together, start working all of them together synergistically, so that we build that platform that Daniel is referring to. But again, opportunities, there are a lot, but it's important to focus, to keep the priorities straight, so that we capitalize the best possible on the opportunities that are out there.
Yeah, I just want to add, Hector, to put maybe a little bit of guardrails on what we're saying and clarify. You know, there's a financial nature to what we've been discussing, right? I mean, when we talk about potentially marketplace, obviously this, the genesis of our digital, or it's very linked to the bricks and mortar operation of OXXO and OXXO's evolution into a payments platform in and of itself. And so, you know, to Paco's point that he just made, you know, you're talking about fintech, you're talking about a loyalty coalition program that at the end of the day also has a financial angle. And the B2B, and you know, we've talked about addressing pain points for the retail trade. All of that has a financial nature. So just to clarify that, you know, we're not thinking about setting up a marketplace to buy bicycles. That's not what we're talking about.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alan Alaniz, Santander. Alan, please go ahead.
can't hear you, Alan. Sorry, we can't hear you, Alan.
I think you're on mute. Or something's wrong with your mic.
Right there. Can you hear me now?
No, quick. We lost you again.
We cannot hear you, Alan.
Nope.
Maybe you want to move on to the next question and we come back to Alan.
Back to you, Alan, in a second. We will go ahead with Ulises Argote from JP Morgan's question. Ulises, please go ahead.
Hey guys, how are you? Thanks for the space for questions. So one quick one here from our side to follow up there on the CapEx conversation. So with that big focus on organic growth that you mentioned, kind of that 1.5 billion being the run rate for CapEx there for the core business and with the cash coming in from the divestments and et cetera, how should we think of the kind of CapEx allocation going forward, maybe versus that 1.5 billion benchmark or maybe as a percentage of sales? And there, if you can provide any color on how this should be allocated between the key business verticals that you're now focusing on. Thank you.
I don't know, Eugenio. I think you are much closer to the numbers or Juan than myself. I mean, in terms of the allocation per businesses, maybe you can help me on that.
Sure. I would say that, under the new strategy on the five-year plan, clearly, there will be more CapEx in the short term than there was before at all of our business units. With a new long-term relationship model in place with the Coca-Cola company, we've seen CapEx pick up at Coke, and we will continue to see that going forward. But again, it's under the construct of a much stabler financial relationship with the Coca-Cola company and a much broader strategy of not only carbonated soft drinks, but other product categories. And multi-channel strategy. In the case of proximity, again, most of the CapEx in the past had been focused on the opening of new OXXO stores. You will see, again, that pick up as a percentage of sales over the course of the next couple of years as we look into these other multi-format strategies. But the same as in the case for Kof, all of these projects are extremely quick paybacks and very high ROIs. So you would see the momentum, which I mentioned before, in terms of seeing double-digit growth coming from both proximity and digital over the course of the next few years, and especially in the case of proximity, without overly diluting the cash flow generation profile. So I would argue that, and again, the proceeds coming from Heineken and other asset disposals will give us the financial flexibility to ramp up the CapEx to the extent that we need it. But having said that, for the most part, the operations will be generating enough capital, and we will tailor the speed at which we deploy that capital, given the success that we see from a lot of these different avenues of growth that we're seeing. And again, to the extent that there is excess capital and no acquisition opportunities that meet our strict financial criteria, we will consider share repurchases or extraordinary dividends going forward.
Thank you. Can we try Alan Melaniz from Santander question again?
No.
Alan.
Something's wrong with your mic.
Maybe if you can email the question to Kike or Juan, we can
I'll do that. I'm trying to, I've been active there. You can hear me now? No.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Crack the code.
Yeah, I cracked the code. I don't know what. Well, first of all, thank you for the patience for the technical glitch. Just really quickly. And great to see you, Daniel, and great to see all of you. You can see that there's this circle that all of us are going through in the questions that we're asking, right? I mean, we're trying to get more clarity in the capital deployment and more clarity in terms of how much cash investors are going to get back. And these are the questions that we're getting from our clients. So no surprise that I'm going to go and my two questions are related to that. The first one is, you were very fast in selling half of the Heineken stake. Why not be as fast in declaring some sort of dividend? Historically, FEMSA has been very reluctant to do buybacks because of tax interpretations, and it has never done like extraordinary dividends. So what changed in that front? That would be the first question regarding giving clarity to investors in terms of how much money they can get back after the sale of Heineken. And the second question is related to what you said regarding Coca-Cola FEMSA issuing shares. Would you participate and would you invest fresh capital into Coca-Cola FEMSA in order to maintain your current ownership, even with different types of shares, versus in the case Coca-Cola FEMSA needed to do a large transaction? Those would be the two questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alan. I mean, in terms of the dividends, I also would like to ask Eugenio and Paco to compliment. But I mean, I understand, and you are correctly to say that I know that many of the questions are around this subject. But I mean, to be very honest, as soon as we can get that clarity, I mean, rest assured that we will provide that clarity. I think at this stage, as I said, I think I really don't feel comfortable trying to give you, I mean, a sense of where the number potentially would be or when that's gonna happen, because I mean there are so many moving parts at this stage that we really want to provide that clarity once we really get that clarity. So I mean that to be very very transparent with you. So I think the message is clear. I mean once we get resources from the announcement that we just made, definitely we will follow the approach that we also said. I mean, make sure that we go to the level of debt that we feel comfortable. Second, that we have enough, if you want, room for organic growth. And third, once we get that clarity, and if there are, also assess potential inorganic growth, definitely we would like to come back to you guys and say, well, that's what we're expecting to potentially return to our shareholders. But unfortunately, we will require some more time to get that clarity in order that we can come back to you. So I'm sorry that we cannot say any more at this stage, because I think we need to, as I said, to get that clarity. And in terms of Coca-Cola FEMSA, as we also said, definitely we don't see at this stage any restriction with the current share structure. So, I mean, if in the future there is a need to review that, definitely we will review it. But as I said, at this stage and with the information and the plans that Coca-Cola FEMSA has in place, we don't see that there is any need to analyze that for the time being. But I think that is what I would like to comment. I don't know, Paco, Eugenio, if you'd like to complement.
Sure. Just on a technical matter, Alan, I think we're taking a little bit more constructive approach with regards to share repurchases on the tax treatment. So I think that is probably something that we've changed over the course of the past few months. So at this point, if it makes sense, I think we would be a lot more conducive to share repurchases than we were in the past. And then just a little bit more detail with regards to COF, because as you know, the ABDL share structure, there is enough equity capacity for a substantial amount of equity placement without hindering our ability to continue to consolidate, even if we don't participate in that equity raise. Having said that, if and when a good opportunity comes along, we would consider participating in an equity raise and keeping the percentage that we deem appropriate, but we would compare and contrast that capital deployment from FEMSA into COF with regards to other capital deployment opportunities at the rest of the businesses. So we do have an enormous amount of flexibility, both financially and strategically, work off be presented with an attractive M&A opportunity.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alvaro Garcia at BTG. Alvaro, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. Congrats. A couple of questions on my end. Firstly, just a clarification on OXXO in the U.S. I guess the question is, technically, could you sell beer in the U.S. today if you opened up shop today on the other side of the border? In the context of the three-tier distribution system, you My understanding is the board seats are no longer, but you still have a minority stake, so I'm not sure how that would be interpreted. And two, maybe for Eugenio, how much debt do you want to pay down in Europe? We see sort of roughly 2 billion euros worth of debt there. I don't know if you have a number in mind as to how much you'd want to pay down. And in the context of having more efficient levels of cash, you know, KOF has a lot of cash on its balance sheet relative to its sales, to its market cap. Would it be fair to assume greater distributions from KOF in the medium term? Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you, Alvaro. I mean, regarding OXXO, I mean, really the three-tier regulation, it applies state by state. So, I mean, that is something that is how it works. So, I mean, over time, we don't see that restriction will apply, and we feel comfortable that, I mean, over the next, I would say, 18 months, we will be in a very good position to really explore both, I mean, the organic and inorganic growth. So I think that the fact that we are not more at the board, as you said, that we have a clear decision made in terms of that we will divest from Heineken, I think that gives us fully flexibility to explore the opportunities in the U.S. So that what I can say regarding the U.S., I don't know, Eugenio, maybe you can take the debt question.
Sure. On the debt, Alvaro, thanks, by the way, for the question. On the debt, as you know, we're planning to keep a 2x net debt to EBITDA ratio under the rating agency's definition, which, as you know, includes the IFRS 16 component. So it's not only the face amount of the bonds we have outstanding at FEMSA, which is about 5.4 billion, but also the capitalized value of the leases, which after Valora, are close to 4.7, 4.8 billion. So we do, as you know, as you saw in the tender, we are looking to deploy 2 billion of cash to repurchase bonds, depending on where the treasuries end up and how successful we are in the tender. We would be retiring about 2.5 billion of face value or face amount of the debt. So that should get us well to where we need to be with regards to reaching the 2x net debt to EBITDA ratio. And again, depending on where the different businesses take us in the future and where EBITDA is, we would look to either purchase a little bit more bonds and or keep a little bit more cash on the balance sheet, again, without having so much cash on the balance sheet that it becomes inefficient. And with regards to your question about the cash at KOF, again, that is something that's being actively monitored at KOF. And obviously, they will make use of that cash as strategic opportunities come about, or as they make capital structure decisions going forward within, again, the construct of not having so much cash that it's inefficient in their balance sheet. So we are actively looking at that and going forward the same way as at FEMSA, we will make sure that we have, optimal capital structures and as limited financial leakage as we can from our financial position while maintaining strategic flexibility.
Thank you. Our final question for today will come from the line of Robert Pierce at Fidelity. Rob, please go ahead.
Hi everyone. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Hello.
Hi. Yep. Thanks a lot for the time and for taking the question. I guess my question is, it's probably a difficult one to answer, and in a similar vein to most of the questions you've received. But just, you know, if you guys think over the next 3-5 years, you know, how much would you anticipate to spend on acquisitions? You know, obviously it will depend on all sorts of things, but do you have a target in mind or anything you can share or sort of what you're thinking about? And then secondly, you know, you've talked about acquiring a convenience store chain in the US. or you're sort of looking at that, you know, if you were, I guess you will have probably already looked at a number of things that are out there that are potential, you could potentially acquire, you know, if you could rate the likelihood of making an acquisition of convenience stores in the US, you know, how do you think it's sort of very likely or not particularly likely? Yeah, would be great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Robert. I mean, in terms of the acquisition, which I understand your question, I mean, let me try to split that in three components. Definitely, if I start with the health division, I mean, in the markets that we are in, if there are good opportunities, again, always keeping in mind the discipline in terms of value creation, we will explore them. So, I mean, that is one, if you want, one piece of the answer to your question. Even though that today, obviously, we have very good position in Chile and Ecuador and Colombia, and maybe there could be some optionalities in Mexico if those appear. So that I would say is one piece of information. In the case of Europe, with our investment at Valora, we are very clear about that the main focus for the next, 12 to 24 months will be on the organic growth. I think we need to really make sure that we can create value by growing the business organically. And definitely, I mean, if good opportunities appear, I mean, in terms of M&A, we will consider them, we will assess properly. But that, I mean, it will take time and it's not the main focus of the short term.
Yeah, we lost Daniel, but...
We will continue exploring the U.S. And then, as I said, we also will look for different options. So one could be, different size in terms of asset. But again, I mean, making sure that we reach that at the right value that can create, the right price in order that can help us to create value. And also, we will consider potential partnerships if that is something that makes more sense, particularly I would say on the fuel side. So that is where we are at this stage. So trying to answer your question about what is the number, I think we are not in a position to answer that at this stage. And that obviously, once those opportunities appear, we will communicate to the market as it has been the case in the past. I don't know, Paco, Eugenio?
I think that it will be also fair to say, Robert, that as regarding the U.S., that we will take the necessary time to continue exploring the possibilities in that market. We have studied that market in the past. We have analyzed it. But moving forward, we will take the necessary time to explore what alternatives are there, both organic and inorganic, and we will take decisions in due time. But we'll take time.
So, guys, I think that's all the time we have for today. It's been a longer call, obviously, than usual. I think very productive, certainly for us, hopefully also for everybody on the call. As always, Kike and myself are always available for follow-ups. Like Daniel said in the beginning, hope to see many of you guys in the coming weeks when we're in New York and Boston and London. So let's wrap it up. So thank you for joining us today. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.